Hello and welcome to another episode of FPL 360. I'm Sean Sullivan.
And I'm Chuck Booth.
Chuck, we had a hell of a game week 27 on our hands. And as a fan of you two, I guess I'll start by saying it was a bloody Sunday.
That it was.
Yeah, Huddersfield Town really screwed up our predictions.
Kind of everyone screwed up our predictions because this was basically a weekend where if we thought something was going to happen, the opposite happened.
Yeah, before we unpack everything, start by saying it was a bloody Sunday at the John Smith Stadium as Huddersfield Town scored the game at 4-1. Meanwhile, Newcastle brought Julia Rafa Benitez Spanish eyes.
Sunday, bloody Sunday.
We'll start with the Terriers. It was by far their best performance of the season. What do we make of this? Is this a flash in a pan or a sign of things to come?
Honestly, I don't know, because Huddersfield has been just one of the weirdest teams in all of the EPL this season, because they'll have points where they beat Manchester United, and then they'll go and give up four goals to just about anyone.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest talking point, I guess, would be when David Wagner's side get the game plan right. They look good. They got an excellent performance from Alex Pritchard in midfield. He had a goal and assist, and the ever-polarizing Steve Mounier got a goal and two assists, because the second goal, I guess, was technically credited to as an own goal from Steve Cook. Going off of that, there's some injury news. Aaron Moy, Mr. Everything for them in the center of the pitch, he suffered a gash on his leg, and while he avoided muscle damage or ligament damage, he will miss two matches after having an infection on the stitches. Do you think the absence of him, obviously we have this weekend with the FA Cup, so that's not a big deal, but if Moy does miss one or two matches, how big of a blow is that for the Terriers?
I mean, if he misses any real time, they're cooked. And it's because he is really their only consistent performer on a week-in and week-out basis.
Yeah, I mean, you do have Danny Williams and Phil Billing to come in the midfield, but obviously they do not offer what Moy has going forward. So, I mean, I'm assuming they're going to set up more defensive. I guess before we move to Bournemouth, what the heck is up with Steve Mounier? I mean, he is so consistently inconsistent.
I mean, I lean towards the fact that he's, like, okay. It's just every 8 weeks, I'd say, or so, he just has an otherworldly performance, because he's gotten all six of his goals in three games, because all he does is score braces. But each of those games has been separated by, I want to say, like 8 to 10 game weeks apiece.
Yeah, his inconsistency is crazy. Game week 1, he had 2 goals. Game week 16, he had 2 goals. And then obviously his big performance in game week 27.
So, sounding like pick him up for the last game week of the season?
Exactly. On the other hand, obviously the Cherries came in great form. They were in the match in the opening 45. They looked flat and void of confidence in the second half. I want to say, obviously, that the Cherries have peaked and we knew they were going to come back down to earth, but are you concerned moving forward from a form side and then I guess also in terms of their FPL assets?
So, in a form side, not really, because, like, let's be real, they weren't going to go unbeaten in 8 straight games. Like, it was remarkable that they made it this far without a loss. From an FPL side, I'm slightly concerned, but it's not really due to that performance. It's more due to the fact that they're getting healthy, meaning we're not going to know who's going to start any games for them.
Yeah, the biggest thing I noticed, and this is something I'd picked up on a little bit and why I had been skeptical in previous weeks to put him in my OFPL side, Callum Wilson, he went missing in the second half. And I know he's not exactly, the quintessential forward, just because he really only plays well in, those high-tempo matches when Bournemouth have a ton of the ball and they're hitting on the run. Are you thinking about, if he's in your FPL team, getting rid of him? Or do you think that this is just another example of kind of what we've come to expect with him?
I mean, due to his price, I'm perfectly fine owning him in FPL because, like, that third forward isn't really someone that you're expecting to consistently score goals unless you're rocking a front three of something like an Aguero, Kane, Vardy, or Aguero, Kane, and Firmino.
Yeah, the other thing, though, I'd say the one promising sign was obviously Stanislas scored. He continues to look good, and the combination of him and Ryan Fraser on the wings looks sustainable moving forward. They combined for that first goal. What is your, value you would slap on Stanislas and Fraser moving forward, specifically in draft?
I mean, a healthy Stanislas is probably midfielder two or three upside. Ryan Fraser is still too goal-dependent for me, to truly rate him, especially due to the fact that with the return of Josh King, we don't know if it's going to be Jordan Ibe or Fraser that eventually makes way. Because in that game, Fraser basically was playing left back in a back five.
Yeah, that's definitely something to note. Moving on to the next match, we're going to talk about something that is a definite. It looks like Martin Dubravka is now Newcastle's new first-choice keeper.
Yeah, the world-renowned keeper, right?
Yeah, the Sparta Prague loanee got a clean sheet in his debut for the Magpies. He had four saves, including an excellent sprawling denial on Michael Carrick in injury time, as Newcastle stuck one to my boys, Manchester United. Mourinho's struggles continue against Newcastle. What is up with that?
Basically, Rafa Benitez owns Mourinho because this was his sixth win over Mourinho, correct?
Yeah, he still has not. Mourinho has still not beaten Newcastle in the Premier League.
Yeah, it's crazy because it's no matter where Rafa is, he gets one over on Mourinho. And at this point, Newcastle is actually pulling their way out of FPL purgatory and starting to get into slightly useful status.
Yeah, the win pulled them out of the relegation zone and moved them to 13th. Meanwhile, Manchester United stayed second, 16 points off of league leaders Manchester City. And they're now only 2 points ahead of third-placed Liverpool. So I guess we'll start.
Yeah. More importantly, United.
Yeah, we'll start with United. They looked like a collective of stars rather than a team. I guess it was kind of cliche to say what's wrong with United. So I guess we'll get a bit more specific. Where does Paul Pogba need to be played for them to get back to their winning ways?
I don't know. Has Paul Pogba said where he likes to be played, and has the entire world said where Pogba performed best? Oh, yeah, right. It's on the left of a midfield three.
Yeah, with that, I mean, I think the problem with him and Matic and the midfield two sitting back is simply just the lack of work rate and the lack of pace, which is why I think, they used a 4-2-3-1. I think there's no way they can't use a 4-3-2-1. When we return to Premier League action for game week 28. In particular, is there anyone in the United team sheet you would like to see in that line of three with Pogba and Matic?
Well, I mean, the lineup was performing completely fine when Juan Mata was in that role alongside Pogba, because the nice thing about having Matic there is the fact that you can play a pretty offensive mixture of midfielders in front of him and not need to worry, because he just offers such a good defensive shield. More likely to make the lineup work in the way that that Mourinho is trying to construct it right now, you'd think it probably has to be Jesse Lingard alongside Pogba.
Yeah, and I guess from a fantasy perspective, you look at Manchester United's run of matches. They have Chelsea, Crystal Palace, Liverpool, West Ham, Swansea. Are you worried about them keeping clean sheets? And then, I guess, in turn, does that make you skeptical of looking at their defenders?
I mean, clean sheets are the one thing where I really don't worry that much when it comes to United, because more often than not, just due to the fact that Mourinho will always set up his teams defensively, and they have David De Gea in goal, 9 times out of 10, you're going to get a clean sheet when you expect it. And, like, while United has tough matches, it's not like most of these teams are going to actually do what Spurs did and just outpossess them for an entire game.
Yeah, so looking specifically at OFPL right now, when you kind of take a look at United's backline, obviously Antonio Valencia is the premium defender at 6.8 million. What's your thoughts on him moving forward, just because he's cooled off a bit in the last few matches?
I mean, I had him earlier in the season, but I haven't really felt too hard-pressed to get him back in my team with United's current form. If United's able to finally figure out what their actual first-choice 11 is, which it's absolutely insane that we've gotten to this point in the season, and Mourinho clearly does not know what his first-choice 11 is, I'd be more inclined to get Valencia back in my team. But right now, he's in my premium Chelsea defender role of not touching them until I see more from the team.
And then before we move on to some of the top performers from the week, I wanted to touch quickly on Matt Ritchie. He finally scored his first goal of the season, thanks to some porous defending from the United midfield and back line. They have Bournemouth coming up in game week 28. Are you interested at all in him for 5.4 million?
Not really. I don't really like any of Newcastle for OFPL outside of maybe Jamal Lascelles, just due to the fact that he's very good in the air and can potentially get you a goal even if they don't keep a clean sheet. But for all we know, especially considering how Richie's been used lately, he might start at wingback, he might not play at all.
Well, one thing we do know, someone who will always be playing where they're best at, Player of the Month, Sergio Aguero, absolutely torched Leicester City, scoring 4 second-half goals. Is he now a must-own player in OFPL?
You cut out when you were saying whoever's name it was. Was this the Aguero discussion?
Yeah, so we'll just restart it.
I mean, it doesn't matter, just due to the fact that I'm going to sync up the audio anyway. So as long as you said that it was Aguero, I can just go from there.
Yeah, I said it was Aguero.
It's tough with Aguero, just due to the fact that I don't see how, unless you want to blow up your entire team, how you can properly get him in your lineup without sacrificing Harry Kane at this point in the season. And if you're giving me a choice, I'm going to take Harry Kane, because even though Aguero may have bigger boom or bust potential, Kane's going to score in more game weeks.
Yeah, the one knock I have on Aguero, it's really nothing to do with him. He's got 8 goals in his last 4 matches. It's just the fact that Manchester City have Arsenal and Chelsea in their next 2 game weeks.
There's also the fact that Gabriel Jesus is getting healthy.
That too. I mean, then their schedule evens out a bit. Stoke, Brighton, Everton, followed by Manchester United and Spurs. Like you said, I'd have to agree there. If you have Kane like I do, I'm not going to pivot off of him to Sergio Aguero. But, I mean, something does need to be said for the fact that, as I mentioned, he's got 8 goals in his last 4 matches.
I mean, one thing you could do is potentially pivot off of, like, one of your premium midfielders, but then you're asking, do you want, like, Mo Salah or Sergio Aguero?
I guess sticking with Manchester City, you had Kevin De Bruyne get a hat-trick of assists. Is he a more appealing option for you than Aguero?
I am 100% looking at Kevin De Bruyne. I'm actually looking at him as a replacement for Raheem Sterling, just because while Sterling is still scoring, he has cooled off. And just looking at my lineup, I like that spot to have a potential for more goals. And I'm not sure if Sterling is actually going to go back to the highs that we saw earlier in the season.
Yeah, that seems like a more feasible pivot with KDB at 10.3 and Sterling at 8.7, while, as I said before, Aguero is at 12. Sticking with forwards, we touched on a little bit earlier, Mr. Touch and Go, Steve Mounier. He's at 5.7 right now in OFPL, 35% owned in Taga. Do you have any interest in buying shares of him?
So in Taga, I have bench spots that I can burn in some leagues. So I'm picking him up solely for the fact that so that other people can't pick him up and have him actually score multiple goals again. I'm not picking him up due to the fact that I actually think he's useful. I'm picking him up more as just damage control for when he eventually scores his next brace.
Yeah, the guy I'm more interested on, Huddersfield Town, is Alex Pritchard. He's at 5.4 million. I don't really rate him in OFPL just because I haven't seen enough yet, but at 1% owned in Taga, I think he's an excellent punt midfielder to add. He's finally got 90 minutes under his belt. Do you think I'm too hot on him? I know I came in and was rating him real high based upon potential in the beginning of the season. After he moved from Norwich.
Definitely not. Just due to the fact that I have watched a lot of Alex Pritchard, basically his entire career, due to him coming through the Spurs Academy. And Pritchard was tipped to be the backup to Christian Eriksen. And if it hadn't have been for injuries and an awful, awful loan to West Brom, he'd probably be on the bench for Spurs today. And you saw against Bournemouth the best of what he can do. He's a very good in possession of the ball. He has a very good eye for playing key passes, and he's also going to get some shots off. So in Taga, even if he doesn't necessarily get an assist, he should still get you at least 6 points. It's just, it took a little longer than we expected to for him to actually fit into the lineup for Huddersfield, just because the way that David Wagner sets the Terriers up to play, everyone has to be very aware of not only what they're doing, but what everyone else around them is doing.
Yeah, I think this run where they could potentially be without Aaron Moy is going to be real telling. They have West Brom and Spurs in their next two league matches, which are both matches the Australia international could potentially miss. It's going to be real telling to see how he plays without that anchor behind him. Looking at his stats, he attempted 5 shots, and he got the goal, which was a clean finish from the Steve Mounier cutback, and then he drew a penalty late on in the match. I like him. I think he's a good fifth midfielder to add and rotate, and I'm kind of high on him for this game against West Brom. Looking at that slate, though, West Brom, Spurs, Swansea, Crystal Palace, do you think that is a favorable run for them, especially Pritchard, or do you think that it's a little bit trickier than on paper?
I mean, so without Moy, I wouldn't start anyone on Huddersfield, and it doesn't matter who the opponent is. When Moy comes back, they're obviously a little bit more appealing. I'm not going to start anyone on Huddersfield against the top six team either, just due to the fact that they're probably going to lay down and be a doormat again. So, that Spurs game, they're probably going to give up 4 goals.
I think that it's a little bit tricky. The next guy we're going to talk about, though, I'm not too worried about him being matchup dependent just because he appears to be Big Sam's first choice forward at the moment, Omar Nias. Is it time to drop Sanctosin?
Yeah, I mean, I've already dropped him literally everywhere. Because Big Sam's comments about him have not been very good and did not make it seem like Towson is actually someone that he wanted to bring in. Currently, I'm not really trusting Omar Nias because I do think that we're going to see a little bit more of Dominic Calvert-Lewin again before this season is over, especially since he came off the bench and immediately scored.
Yeah, see, I'm actually rather hot on him, and I know the number is slanted a little bit just because he scored, I believe, twice off the bench this season. But looking at his splits, he's averaging a goal every 121 minutes. He's got 7 goals and 15 appearances and 3 assists, and those are numbers that I really like.
Yeah, no, he's definitely getting results, but I do believe that he's better as a change of pace option for Everton than he is as their actual first choice forward, especially considering that Everton's still not good. They just played a hurting Crystal Palace team.
So if you look at their next four, Watford, Burnley, Brighton, Stoke City, does your valuation of Nias have anything to do with thinking that Gylfi Sigurdsson hasn't been himself lately? Or do you think him scoring last time out is going to be an overall boost for that whole team?
I mean, Gylfi is actually coming back to being himself, as he also got on the score sheet and slowly but surely getting back to about where people expected him to be. But I don't think that run of fixtures is necessarily as easy as it may seem, especially as Brighton's currently showing that they're going to give almost anyone a tough day. And while Stoke hasn't necessarily shown that they can really keep clean sheets, they have showed that they've at least locked it up a bit at the back and that they're no longer the worst defense in the Premier League.
Yeah, I mean, having talked about those two guys where matchups kind of affect their value, the next guy we're going to talk about has been good regardless of who he's played, and that's Mo Diame from Newcastle. He's averaging 11.2 points per match in his last 8 starts. I know you like him. He's a central midfielder. He plays along either side, Jonjo Shelvey or Mikel Moreno. What valuation would you slap on him at the moment?
I mean, right now, I mean, he's currently performing probably above his means, but he's still probably a midfielder 4 or 5. Like, obviously, he's absolutely useless in official FPL just due to the fact that he's not going to score a goal, and if you look at the goals that he has scored, he was more lucky to score them than him actually doing anything to deserve scoring them. But he's going to complete dribbles, he's going to get interceptions, he's going to complete some tackles. So on a bad day for him, and this would be a day that Newcastle absolutely gets steamrolled, he'll still get you 8 points, which is pretty damn useful in Taga.
Yeah, he seems to fit the bill for your coveted non-goal-dependent midfielders.
Yes. Non-goal-dependent midfielders are very important to a winning mixture in Taga leagues.
Yeah, and while non-goal-dependent forwards are few and far between, Alexander Sorloth from Crystal Palace, he looked good on his debut. He had 19 points from 6 aerials won, 4 key passes, 4 successful dribbles. I know you're hot on this guy too. Can you explain to me why though?
All I really need to say is it's Christian Benteke Light. He's gonna roll up, win a bunch of headers, and he also got some key passes, which I'm not gonna buy those key passes turning into assists because it's Crystal Palace, but these were all useful in him getting a 19-point day on a day that Crystal Palace got 4 goals dropped on them.
So from my stance, I like Steve Mounier more because, yes, he's inconsistent, but he's been known, he's done it to pop up with two goals. And that's why I rate him higher than Solaroff. But the thing that works in your favor is that Laurent Duportre is back, so there's going to be competition at Huddersfield Town, and they only play with one forward. So from that standpoint, who would you rather have rest of the season, Solaroff or Mounier?
I mean, that's not even a question for me. It's easily Solaroff. While we don't necessarily know if he's going to feature every single week for Crystal Palace, I don't see why he wouldn't feature every single week for Crystal Palace, even once Wilfried Zaha returns. And if anything, once Zaha returns, you'd expect it to be a little better for him because you'll have someone else other than Townsend and Kabay that could actually play some balls into the box.
But even with Spurs, United, Chelsea in their next three, you still like
that,
them?
That just means it's going to be even more balls just flying forward for him to knock down. All about those aerial points.
Another forward we're going to talk about, he scored again. Chicharito now has 3 goals and 1 assist in his last 4. West Ham are starting to get healthy again. At $6.7 million, is it time to buy in on the Mexican international?
Totally. While all Chicharito does is score on balls in the box, he is very good at that. And it's kind of insane actually watching the goals that he scores, because sometimes you're just like, there's a giant clusterfuck and, oh, Chicharito scored. He just knows where to be. And while we have the good old David Moyes hates Chicharito narrative, David Moyes seems to realize that he doesn't have a choice but to play Chicharito if he wants West Ham to win.
I was going to say, with long-term absentee Andy Carroll not in the picture, I mean, you had Arnie come back into the team, you had Antonio come back in, and the front three was Arnie, Chicharito, and Yao Mario. When Manuel Lanzini returns, are you at all worried about Moyes sticking Arnie up top and relegating Chicharito to the bench?
I am slightly concerned about that, but what's more likely to happen is that João Mario gets relegated to the bench because Mario and Lanzini played the exact same position. The really interesting thing is going to be, where the hell does Mikel Antonio play? Because he can very easily line up at right wing, but he could, for all we know, line up at right back, which would be absolutely awful for Toggle users.
Yeah, so I guess if you had to pick one of these three to have in your OFPL side when you make your next transfers, who would you rather have? Arnie at 6.8, Chicharito at 6.7, or Antonio at 7.4?
I'm taking Chicharito because, again, I'm always, like, while Arnie's been very good, I'm always hesitant of transferring players in while they're hot, because odds are that that's probably going to end. While Chicharito is really just scoring at his career numbers, like, he's always been a very useful forward. It's just he's never gotten enough minutes outside of when he played at Leverkusen to make good on it.
Yeah, and I mean, if you look at his entire season, obviously he has those 3 goals in his last 4 matches. But looking at his starts overall this season, he does have 7 goals. So when he's gotten 90 minutes, he's usually produced. And while I do think he's definitely the guy to look at, I'm tended to sway towards Arnie. And mainly just because, you know, when he's fit, he's going to be in the team no matter what. And while I think I would be trading a little bit production, as Chicharito is just doing what Chicharito does, I'd rather have the sanity in mind knowing that no matter what, David Moyes is going to stick the big Austrian in his 11. But as you said, it'll be interesting. Any thoughts on them potentially playing Chicharito and Arnie up top just in a front two?
I mean, that would be interesting. I just don't really see West Ham actually functioning well in a standard 4-4-2. Moyes has done it, but I just think that 4-3-3-ish formation is probably the best for them right now. And unfortunately, given how their current players are performing, that probably means that Arthur Masuaku's time in the team has probably come to an end after his nice suspension.
Yeah, he did not do himself any favors with that horrific spitting incident, which has still perplexed me. But sticking with forwards, we're going to get to some listener questions now. I think it's only appropriate we address the big French elephant in the room. We got a question from Brendan on Twitter saying, would you drop Lacazette for Soleimani? If not, what does he do with Lacazette?
I would definitely make that move to drop him. I would, honestly, I'd drop him for anything. I'd even drop him for my team right now and not pick anyone up currently, just because he's that useless. When I got a message that he was injured, I immediately texted an Arsenal fan, like, what is he hurt with, a bruised ego because of the chances that he missed against Spurs?
Yeah, he's expected to miss 6 weeks as he recovers from knee surgery. While I don't think it's a huge boost in Danny Welbeck's value, I mean, it just means he's going to get time in the Europa League and he might get some substitute cameos. I think Soleimani is definitely a guy to look at, though, just because Newcastle needs goals to stay up. And if Matt Ritchie stays in the team plays somewhat like he played against Manchester United, I could see the big Algerian getting 3 to 4 goals down the stretch.
Oh, yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. Like, if we look at how Newcastle plays, like, they actually create, like, a pretty decent amount of chances. It's just all hurt by the fact that they have Ozelu up top, who is not very good. Like, he's going to run a lot, but he's not going to actually score. Which, the weird thing is the fact that he has somehow netted 8 goals this season.
Yeah, he's a real shyster. I'm not real sure how that works. But sticking with Soleimani,
I mean, it took him 71 shots to do it. That's how it works. Like, he has an absolutely awful shots to damage ratio. But if you're considering that he was able to take 71 shots and net 8 goals, I'd say probably if you give Soleimani about 45 shots for the rest of the season, we should be able to pencil him in for 4 to 5 goals.
Well, yeah, with our shared understanding that Soleimani is definitely someone to consider, we have a question from FPL Murph, also on Twitter, saying, pick one of these forwards, Nias, Soleimani, Rondon, and Glenn Murray. Who, I guess, lights your fire the most out of that stack of four?
I mean, outside of Soleimani, just because that's very clearly our number one choice here, my number two is Glenn Murray. And I hate myself for saying this because I don't think Glenn Murray's very good, but he's performed well for Brighton at home. And he's also on penalties, which ups his value.
Yeah, I think he is too... First of all, I think he's too old, and he just gets goals out of necessity with no one else up top. And that's why I think Nias is the best bet. If you look at Everton's schedule, I know they've been in and out of form, but outside of Manchester City and Liverpool in game weeks 32 and 33, they have the most favorable run of fixtures. And if he stays in the team, he's going to keep doing what he's done all season, and that's put the ball in the back of the net. I just like how he runs, how he disrupts things for opposing back lines. So he would be the guy I would look at out of that list, although I do still think Soleimani is probably the premium shout.
Yeah.
And then I guess Rondon just takes up space. He'll get time with Sturridge.
Yeah, Rondon is essentially useless. Like, I don't like him. I'm kicking myself for drafting him at the beginning of the season. And he's not even the best forward on his own team, because that's Jay Rodriguez.
Sticking with the rest of Filmer's questions, the other part he has is Will Hughes worth an ad?
So, it depends. If you have a bench spot to burn, I mean, go ahead and do it. But I don't think that Will Hughes is going to be particularly useful, especially not as useful as I think he would have been had Marco Silva been coaching this team. Because first, we have to remember that it's getting late in the season, and Hughes has been out for a very long time. Like, there's no way in hell that he'll just pop into the lineup next game week. And considering the current lineup that Watford is playing that is also performing relatively well, you can't even guarantee that Will Hughes necessarily deserves a starting spot in the lineup right now.
So would you rather add Will Hughes or Alex Pritchard if you're looking for a midfielder?
Pritchard's guaranteed to start, so Pritchard.
Yeah, I think that's the issue I have with Hughes is him coming back, even though he was great when he got minutes before he got hurt. It's even for a bench spot, you're kind of taking a bigger risk than you really need to with him not having a clear line of sight back into the starting 11. Moving on to our next question we have from Satish on Twitter. Thoughts on James Milner and Bernardo Silva's value now that Sané is back?
Well, Bernardo Silva now has no value because he moves back to his bench/impact sub role. And honestly, he really didn't do that much while actually filling in for Leroy Sané. So, like, cut bait now. Milner is probably still not going to start very much in the actual Premier League, just because he's a lot more useful when Liverpool needs consistency for Champions League. But he's someone where you kind of just want to add him if you check lineups in the morning, but it's not worth holding him on a bench spot.
So I guess you're saying with Milner owned in 44% of leagues, it's safe to leave him on the free agent market and then just plug him in when you wake up and see he's in the starting 11s?
Most definitely.
So you wouldn't, even if you were in a 12-team league with a thin pool of defenders, you wouldn't consider adding him to your bench?
There's never a thin pool of defenders. I wouldn't add him.
Yeah, I think the best option is to roll with matchup-based guys who offer a bit more in terms of playing time. Although I do like Milner, and he is useful when he starts, I think the scarcity of starts is just too much of a risk to burn a spot on your bench.
Yeah, most definitely.
And our final question from Jeremy Spitzberg on Twitter, talking about the blank double game week strategy. He has his chips, but he's not sure how to use them. So, Chuck, with the looming postponement of matches from cup competitions, have you started thinking about your strategy for preparing for blanks?
So, what I'm looking to do is that once blanks start rolling around, particularly for Spurs and City, because they're the guys where if they both blank in the same week, I am not going to be able to field a full 11 players in FPL. I would be looking to use my free hit ahead of the blank game week so that I can still keep the general composition of my team without actually jeopardizing like price changes and whatnot. And then ahead of when a double game week would be, that's when I'm looking to use my wild card so that I can make sure that I have the maximum three players from each team.
Yeah, I don't really have a horse in this just because I've used my cards, so I don't have the helping hand if needed. I've tried to diversify my OPL side most of this season, and I do have Salah and Firmino both in my 11, which is a little bit worrisome, but I guess the advice I would have is you don't necessarily need to blow up your team, but it would might be a smart time to start thinking about diversifying your assets. In particular, just with a club like Liverpool, who after their 5-goal outburst in the Champions League, look like they're going to be headed deep into that tournament.
I mean, it seems like every Premier League team not named Chelsea has a pretty good shot at featuring in the next few rounds of Champions League, as long as they don't get placed against one another.
Yeah, I have to agree with that. They're going to have a hell of a time handling Barcelona. But with that said,
I am excited to watch them get steamrolled.
Do you think if they get steamrolled, Conte gets fired?
No, just because it's Barcelona. Like, this is essentially like Arsenal getting drawn versus Bayern Munich like 3 years in a row. You don't really expect them to actually do well, so you can't really fire Conte on that. It's more going to be if Chelsea misses out on the top four, Conte will be fired. But the thing is, at the end of the season, all signs are pointing toward Conte leaving anyway, so it's kind of a moot point at that time.
Yeah, I guess sticking with Chelsea before we wrap up today's episode, they have United and City away in their next two matches. Are you worried about the likes of Azpilicueta and Marcos Alonso?
I mean, I already sold Azpilicueta. Chelsea defenders are borderline useless to me right now, because the only reason worth owning most Chelsea defenders outside of Marcos Alonso was clean sheet potential. And with Alonso mysteriously not starting, especially considering that Emerson is returning to fitness, I don't feel as confident as I would have at the beginning of the season just trotting Alonso out there and hoping that he's going to get me some attacking returns.
Yeah, I also hopped off the Alonso train last week when I brought in Antonio Valencia. And just to update on his injury, he had a hamstring problem, and then he picked up a knock in training, which is why he did not play against West Brom. But before we say goodbye, just wanted to let you know, look on Twitter for Chuck or I posting asking about questions for next week's episode when we preview game week 28. I guarantee we will be back, but I cannot guarantee, however, when we will be back.
And also be sure to not make any transfers until all of the FA Cup games are done.
So, till next time, I'm Sean Sullivan.
And I'm Chuck Booth.
And enjoy the FA Cup weekend.